I can still remember the conversation with my friend Matt. It was about 2004 or 2005. We were out for a run. I think it was on La Sierra Avenue. It was a hot summer day, and we were talking about those long, full-distance triathlon events that are called Ironman. 2.4-mile swim, a 112-mile bike, and a 26.2 marathon run to finish it off. Would you ever do one of those, he asked. I don't know, man. Those people are crazy, I responded. I mean, to put your body through that? No, I think these shorter races that we're doing are good enough for me. No, I'd never do one of those. Yeah, me either, he said. Crazy. My name is Vaughn Nelson. I'm a pastor here at the La Sierra University Church, and in 35 days, I will be participating in the Ironman Amateur World Championships in Kona, Hawaii. And today, I want to tell you the story of how a person goes from that's crazy to I'm going to Kona. I did my first triathlon when I was 22. And a student here at La Sierra. It was what's called an Olympic distance. Maybe you saw the men's and women's races in Rio. 1,500-meter swim, 40K bike, and a 10K run. I'd started cycling when I was 16, and I'd run cross-country in academy, so I thought triathlon would be a fun way to put those two sports together. But swimming, when I was like in second grade, I'd begged, tearfully begged my mom to write a note to get me out of school swimming lessons because I got so panicky when they made us do those dunking drills. So swimming, I was going to have to start from scratch. I relied on patient friends and YouTube videos to work on turning my doggy paddle expertise into semi-legitimate swimming. Finally, I was ready-ish. The first race was called Wildflower. It's this massive triathlon festival near Paso Robles, California. It features about 6,000 triathletes racing over the weekend. And on Sunday's Olympic distance race, it also happens to be the collegiate championship. So, my first triathlon swim start was in a wave of 200 hyper-testosteroned collegiate men. It looked a little bit like this, and I looked a little bit like this. I remember thinking this exact thought after the swarm of elbows, knees, and toes had passed over me, and I was back to my doggy paddling. Well, I guess this whole triathlon thing just isn't for me after all. Eventually, I made it out of the water and actually ended up quite enjoying the cycling and the running. And so, in fact, after that, I went back to Wildflower 4 more years in a row. I was hooked. A few years later, I did my first half Ironman distance triathlon in Santa Cruz, California. It was a swim out and around the pier, a bike ride up and down the Central California coast, and then a run that ended with the last half mile on the beach. It was awesome. You see where this is headed. I believe it's called a slippery slope. Not long after that, I was in Barnes & Noble at Tyler Mall. Browsing the triathlon section, I came across a book entitled Going Long, Training for Ironman Distance Triathlons. Merely curious, I took the book off the shelf and opened it up to the first chapter called The Iron Journey, Can I Do It? The authors then listed some character traits necessary for this kind of thing. Focus, okay? Adaptability, sure, why not? Emotional stability, okay? Quiet cockiness, I prefer understated confidence, but sure. Mental toughness and appropriately psyched. I have no idea what that means, but all right. And then they had a checklist of a few workouts you should be able to complete as a prerequisite. I went down that list, check, 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 check. And I remember putting the book down and whispering, uh-oh. Before I knew it, I'd identified my goal. 2008 Ironman Coeur d'Alene in Idaho. 14 months to go. That first year of Ironman training was an adventure. I was working as a halftime pastor at Norco, going to school at La Sierra for my master's, and swimming, biking, and running a lot. For me, a big part of the fun was sort of the science project of figuring out how it all worked. I read through books, charted out training plans in spreadsheets, and looked up people's blogs online and experimented through trial and error. Ironman race day finally came, and my family gathered at beautiful Lake Coeur d'Alene. My training paid off. The stars aligned with good fortune and good health. No flats, no falls, no upset stomach. And I crossed the line to hear the trademark announcement, "You are an Ironman." And you would think that would be enough. It was for a while. 2 weeks later, I met Becky, then moved to San Diego. Now a full-time pastor, still a part-time student at La Sierra, dating a girl from LA, then engaged to a girl from LA, and then finally married. My priorities shifted a bit. But eventually, not long after we moved back here to La Sierra, I was again feeling the lure of long-distance triathlons. So Becky and I struck a deal. One Ironman, just to get it out of my system for a decade or so. There was a new Ironman course at Lake Tahoe. It was perfect. So this time, I began experimenting with time-crunched, efficient ways, more efficient ways of training. For example, I traded in my outdoor bike rides for indoor sessions on a bike trainer in my garage. An hour indoors is like two outdoors, they say. No coasting, no hills, no flat tires, no stoplights, no risk of getting hit by cars. And it all went well. Lake Tahoe race day finally came, but there was a problem. Smoke from the massive King Fire had wafted over the mountains and settled in the Tahoe Basin. The hope was that the wind would blow the right direction and move the smoke away from the Tahoe area, and actually the weather prediction favored this. But by race morning, the needed wind had not materialized, and the smoke was worse. Air particulate counts were something like 1,000 times the acceptable level. So at the very last minute, the race officials gave up hope and announced to the thousands of us in our wetsuits in the water that the race was canceled. I was stunned, but also kind of like, well, what you gonna do? The real tragedy was the people that lost their homes, right? But it was still a bummer. The scene that captures that day best for me was walking past a miniature golf course that was near our cabin and seeing this tall, athletic dad with shaved legs sort of half-heartedly putting a colored golf ball towards a plastic windmill. And I thought, yeah, that. I wanted to go hug him, but I didn't. The makeup offer from Ironman was free entry into another race, so I opted to try again the next year at Tahoe. Becky's in my deal stretched from one Ironman to two. Then on a Friday morning, 3 weeks after the canceled race, a careless driver sent my Honda Fit and me rolling off the 10 West freeway and down an embankment. Miraculously, a seatbelt and airbags did their jobs, and I escaped with a few cuts, some sore ribs, a bump on my forehead, and some forced rest. All of it. A fortunate outcome for which I was deeply grateful. But I do admit thinking this has not really been my month. The beginning of 2015 then meant another season of gearing up for Tahoe Take 2 in September. And here's the thing you know about endurance training. It compounds over years and seasons. Fitness does. So as I started up again in January, I was starting with the benefits of the prior year. I began to notice that I kept setting personal bests in my training workouts, and one more crazy goal emerged in my head. Maybe, just maybe, I might have a shot at qualifying for the original Ironman in Kona, Hawaii. In each Ironman branded race around the world, a certain number of Kona slots are allocated to the various age groups, like male 35 to 39. In my relatively large age group, there are typically like 3 to 5 slots available to the top age group finishers. And as I looked over past results, I began to suspect that it just might be possible to qualify at Tahoe. Not a guarantee at all, but an outside chance. So September came, and I could tell you in detail the status of every fire in the western states. But by race weekend, we looked clear to go. Things went well. No flats, no falls, no fires, no upset stomach. And I gave it everything. When I crossed the line, I was 22nd overall and 4th in my age group, which turned out to be enough to have qualified for Kona. And so now, Becky and I had a... So Becky and I had a decision to make. Again, could we stretch one Ironman into 3 Ironman? It was not an easy decision for either of us, actually, for lots of reasons, but in the end, we said, sure. And so now, pending no fires, no volcanoes, no car wrecks, no Zika virus, or whatever, in 36 days, I will, I've promised, have gotten Ironman out of my system for the foreseeable future, at least. The question I get asked a lot, as you can imagine, is, why? And I am tempted to give the well-known answer that people who climb Mount Everest give, because it's there. But maybe a more helpful reason, and the reason that better fits my story, is because I can. And I don't mean that flippantly, please hear me. Because I can. As I've thought about this, I realize that this whole thing for me has been a sort of journey of discovery of what I'm able to do. So I can imagine psychoanalysts of a certain persuasion having a heyday and suggesting that this is my grand attempt at ignoring or denying my mortality. It's a dramatic reaction to a deep-seated fear of weakness and frailty and death. And sure, maybe, perhaps, on some level. But I'd also like to turn that notion on its head. As you know, we pastors have this sacred privilege to journey with people through life's most fragile moments and face mortality and weakness alongside them. So, thanks to this, I am well aware of the fragility, the often fleeting nature of good health and good fortune. And as a husband of someone who lives with chronic pain most days, I'm acquainted with the frustration and the unfairness of bodies that rebel for no discernible reason at all. So I go about all of this, most days, the better days, with an awareness of how fortunate I am to have a body that, for the time being, is working well just the way I want it to. And I'm very conscious of the privilege and good fortune it is to have space in life for a hobby like this. For me, this journey has been rooted in a desire to make the most of what is given in the present, a desire to embrace the inexplicable grace that I find my life drenched in for no discernible reason at all. And I'm learning to do this better from people who do it very well. A couple of weeks after the last year, about a year ago, a couple of weeks after the qualifying race at Tahoe, I stopped by Oasis on the way into work to get breakfast, and I ran into Calvin and Eden Anakaya. Knowing the Anakayas, maybe I should have been prepared for what ensued, but to be honest, it threw me completely off balance in a good way. They came running up and insisted on buying my breakfast that morning. They were so excited about my race and getting to Kona, and it was all so kind and beautiful, but the whole time I was thinking, wait, I should be buying you all breakfast. If you know the Anakayas, you know that First of all, they're great athletes themselves. Last year, Eden made it to the Boston Marathon. And yeah, between the two of them, they have run 30 marathons in the last 8 years. 30, which on its own is incredible. But they have done this all the while that Calvin has been on a 12-year-long journey with cancer, which for me is a really valid reason to avoid stories that remind them how easy some people have it and how unfair life can be. And yet they've chosen this path of getting out there and doing what they can when they can, and then turning around and cheering for others when they can't, when life is interrupted for no good reason at all. Calvin, whose own goal of doing a triathlon keeps getting interrupted, he tells me this yesterday. The chemotherapy I'm on right now gives me blisters on my hands and feet, so running's not really an option these days. But I figure that's a good excuse to work on my swimming. It's my weak sport. Yeah, that. Maybe we aren't all wired to respond to life's unfairness like the Anakias, and that's totally okay. But there is a certain grace, a certain generosity, a certain groundedness that I want to learn from them. To do what I can when I can, and to be okay when I can't. That, I think, is a posture of gratitude. And gratitude is where I want to close today. I am grateful to you all, a supportive community who encourages its pastors to have a life. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful to family and close friends who, for reasons I cannot fathom, seem to enjoy spending long hours observing me ride a bicycle and run in circles, and who have some unnatural capacity to cheer like it's something new every time. I am grateful to Becky for making space in our lives for this crazy hobby and for being generous when my attempts at balance fall a little bit short. And I am grateful for inexplicable grace that accompanies all of us on whatever journey we find ourselves on.
Yes, once upon a time, there's a pastor from a conservative Protestant denomination, who qualified for one of the world's most iconic and difficult sports championships. Vaughn will compete in a contest to rule them all, 140 miles, 17 hours. He'll swim in the 80-degree temperatures of the water there in the Kailua Bay. He'll run and bike along the rugged terrain, that volcanic terrain on the Kona coast. He'll push through 45-mile-an-hour crosswinds, 95-degree weather, and that sticky, you know, Hawaii weather. Vaughn will do all of this once upon a time. A pastor? Really? Really? Once upon a time, a pastor. You know, pastors are not well people. You may not all follow the research on mortality and morbidity for pastors. The most recent research this last year tells us that pastors are some of the most unwell people. We struggle with depression and exhaustion and fatigue, obesity, high blood pressure, cardiac disease, stroke. Pastors, people leading congregations, according to the research, are some of the most unwell people ever. Did you know that was a ministry liability in 2016? This is not an advertisement we will use at the Divinity School, by the way. So when one of us is well and strong, we ought to name it. When one of us is pushing against the odds, against the vocational liabilities, it's worth celebrating. Pastor Vaughn is the epitome of health and wellness that Adventist Christians have valued for so many generations. And he's vegetarian. The Ironman Championship, this qualifier pastor, he happens to teach a gospel of cooperation over competition. Vaughn teaches a gospel of cooperation over competition. Now, Vaughn didn't create this idea, he got it from Jesus. Cooperation over competition. It's summarized in the story of the two brothers who come to Jesus and ask, at the end of time when there's a banquet table, could we have the seats next to you, Jesus? And Jesus says, time out. In my kingdom, we won't lord power over people. It won't work this way. There won't be winners and losers. And if you push me on this, I'll tell you that the losers actually win. In my kingdom, it's the losers who are strong, Jesus tells these two brothers. And I can tell you that that's not a mantra that's going to play well in Kona next month. 2,000 athletes are not traveling to Hawaii to lose, are they? Dear Vaughn, what have you gotten into? Once upon a time, there's a pastor from a conservative Protestant denomination who qualified for one of the world's most competitive sports events of all time. How does this happen, and what does it mean? Today, we finish, Vaughn, with our summer sermon lineup. We've had 12 voices from the pews all summer long, and Vaughn's story is similar to so many that we heard this summer, a theme. We didn't go searching for this theme. It emerged, a theme of irony and impossibility. In so many of the stories we heard this summer, we heard about a young Cuban boy who migrated with his family, who could have spent his life in probably a work concentration style center, and instead becomes the chair of our music department and a music educator that, like almost none other. This summer, we heard another story from several, the one that I want to call to mind, this one, an artist, Crystal Chavez. She learns about people from drawing blind. Do you remember that illustration, blind drawing? We learned about a little boy who grew up, his mother married 3 times, his father married 6 times, and he is able to celebrate his own 50-year wedding anniversary this summer. We heard from a widow, she unexpectedly finds herself a widow, and her despair becomes happy rooms painted for oppressed voices all around the world. Many of you have told us, we don't want the summer to stop. Could we please keep doing this? We will do this again next summer, by the way. We asked 100 of you, the first 12 of you said yes, so we still have a long list to go. We'll do it again next summer. It's interesting when we take Vaughn's story seriously and we see the impossibility and the irony this morning. I want to ask you, when you think about stories that involve athletes and prizes and races and competitions and endurance and perseverance and a prize. When I say all of those things, a text or two comes to your mind, doesn't it? In fact, it's a cluster of texts in the Bible. And if I'm truthful with you this morning, I'm going to tell you that in all of my years of pastoring, this is a cluster of texts I've never studied and that I have resisted. These athletic metaphors for the life of faith, they don't come from the great teachings of Jesus, they come from the life of Paul and these communities that live 30 and more years after Jesus, where they reach for this metaphor of the athletic life to teach us something about faith, our lives of faith. Texts like this, 1 Corinthians 9, do you not know that in a race, all runners, but only one gets the prize? Run in such a way as to get the prize. Everyone who competes in the games goes into strict training. They do it to get a crown that will not last, but we do it to get a crown that will last forever. Therefore, I don't run like someone running aimlessly. I don't fight like a boxer beating the air. I strike a blow to my body and I make it my slave, so that after I've preached to others, I myself will be disqualified for the price. Verses like this, Acts chapter 20. However, Paul says, I consider my life worth nothing to me. My only aim is to finish the race and complete the task the Lord gave me. From Philippians chapter 3. But one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining toward what is ahead. What's the text you all love so well? I press on for the prize, to win the prize which God has called me to, heavenward in Christ Jesus. From Galatians 5, maybe you've not heard this one. You were running a good race. Who cut in on you to keep you from obeying the truth? And 2 Timothy 2, an athlete is not crowned unless he or she competes. 2 Timothy 4, very well known. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. Now there is in store for me the crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will award to me on that day. And not only to me, but to all those, all who have longed for his appearing. There's not too much talk about races and running in the New Testament, except for this cluster of passages, the athletic metaphor for life. And if we leave this text from 2 Timothy on the screen, I'll tell you what my challenge has been with these passages. This one is a good example. When we read this text, we're often reading something a little more like this. I have fought the good fight because I was able with my own determination. With my own determination and strength, I finished the race. Because I didn't sin and I remained faithful, I have earned a crown of righteousness. You see, the text doesn't say that, but we've read it this way and we've heard it this way in generations of Christian teaching and theology. And when we press on this athletic metaphor hard like this, it falls to pieces. We somehow have taught ourselves that if we press on and work hard enough, and then one day when this all comes to end, if we've done this competition well, our prize will be Jesus. But the athletic journey, like the Ironman journey, like the spiritual journey, not everything aligns. The metaphor breaks down under pressure. This is how I'd like to say it this morning. We can only take that metaphor so far. It's not exclusive. It's not comprehensive. It's not even completely accurate. The metaphor can't take us to the end of the race. It's just a metaphor, friends. It's just language for the way we talk about our life of faith, our life which is faith. It breaks down because in this race we call life, we don't achieve the finish line. La Sierra, we have taught this for generations around here. We don't achieve the finish line by our own efforts. We are carried across the finish line by the divine effort. So this is where the metaphor gets into trouble. There's no debate about this. We don't complete the race. God, through Jesus, completes the race. However, the metaphor helps us know that in cooperation with God, the choices that we make, choice by choice, day by day, the ordering of things, in all of that, divine energy does break through, and Jesus can be known in our world. It's small choices day by day that Vaughn is making. Let me give you an example. Look at this chart, this graph, actually. You cannot believe the technology available to athletes to track their work. Vaughn says that when Becky looks at this, she starts to yawn. I'm going to see if I can explain it. The blue line is the one to watch. The blue line is the long distance with Vaughn, and you can see this graph is marked by events from the half Ironman to Carlsbad to Lake Tahoe again, and to next month in Hawaii. That blue line tells you how Vaughn's fitness is over the long haul. He doesn't move that blue line by 1 week of exercising. It takes 6 weeks of work or so. Small choice upon small choice to impact that blue line. And the goal is, as you see, it builds up over time. There's a foundation of fitness. Now that pink line, that's kind of the fatigue factor. Those are for the bursts of action that are happening 1 week at a time, 1 week at a time, 1 week at a time, where Vaughn fatigues his body. It's episodes of hard work. And then that yellow line is the difference between the two, represents sort of the tension. Vaughn uses the word for that. It represents his freshness, right? I don't completely understand everything I'm looking at, or do you? But this is what athletes do, right? He measures his power, and he measures his intensity, and his episodes of working out, and then he dumps it all into a piece of technology that'll tell him how he's doing. So, a small example, we can understand. Vaughn has to eat to pull all of this off, right? Vaughn, can you come and join me for a minute? Vaughn comes into the office every day with this backpack. And I'm always curious, as the closer we get to Kona, what's in the backpack? I'm so curious, what's in the backpack? It's taking you about 4,000 calories a day to eat. What we call lunch, Vaughn calls fueling. What I call supper, it's a small snack for him. So in here we have lots of little packages of things. A fig bar. Is this oatmeal?
It's an oatmeal.
Is this a snack?
Yeah, that's 100 calories a day.
100, 200.
Another two, that's four, five, six.
Let's keep going. No wonder that,
those are gold. That's like 2,000 in that thing.
2,000 Trader Joe's mixed nuts right here, going
with
for 2,000.
With the peanut butter cups,
The peanut butter cups is
gold.
More.
Yeah.
This is delicious. This is more calories than I'm supposed to eat in a whole day, right here. This bag right here. Yeah. Fantastic, Vaughn, we love you so much right now. And more, like these are, that's a couple hundred.
It's protein, yeah, three, two. Yeah.
So this is like almost today's food if you don't do anything else.
If I didn't eat real food, yeah, that would do it.
You do have some real food in between.
Yeah, that's better.
That's better food. So we went out to eat the other day, the pastors.
Yeah, this is a true story. We have staff meeting at a restaurant, and the server asks Austin for his order, and he orders it, and she says, do you want the half size or the full size? And he says, half size. And Pastor Chris jumps in, no, get the full, and then you can give Vaughn the leftovers. And she was worried about me. I promise I'll get it all back in a month.
All of your leftovers can go to a little townhouse in Loma Linda until October, okay? 4,000 calories a day. Thank you for showing us that, right? Small choice by small choice. He puts things in his mouth. He fuels. Every few hours, Vaughn is fueling in our presence, like you bring your electric car up to the meter and plug it in. This is what Vaughn is doing with his days. He's fueling. We're over in Arizona for meetings. Pastor Vaughn and Bev and I and a few of you here who were delegates at our Pacific Union constituency session. Early on Monday morning, we decided, let's get up early. We'll go out and have a cup of tea. So we said, Vaughn, 6:30, join us. Kirby, Bev, and I, we get over to the place. Vaughn's like, I got to do a quick run. So he has to do a quick run. We grab tea. We show up at the meeting at 8. Vaughn, how many miles was a quick run? 14. Small choice by small choice. Vaughn is doing this, choice after choice. See, there are not shortcuts to quicker legs and stronger arms and more capable lungs, to soundness of mind and body that prepares him. This happens over the long haul for this athlete. And it compounds and it builds up. Vaughn illustrates for us, friends, a very important point, a distinction between calling ourselves Christian and being a disciple. To become a Christian, all we have to do is to go underwater. To become a disciple, we have to turn our lives upside down. To become a Christian, it can just be lip service. To be a disciple, it'll be small choice after small choice after small choice, transformative choice. Vaughn helps us understand the difference between these two, to be a Christian, to be a disciple. The word disciple is the more primitive and primary word in the Bible. 250 times, Jesus and his disciples and the disciples in the New Testament church, the word Christian, it's just 3 times in there. Dallas Willard says, no one goes reluctantly or sloppily or easily into discipleship. Small choice after small choice. So for Vaughn, when he makes these choices, he's helping us understand discipleship. This is what I think these athlete metaphor passages, what they're trying to understand. How is it we become disciples? We can't just sit in a circle and it happens. Small choice by small choice, rhythms, patterns, discipleship. For Vaughn, every day it's a trade-off. He can't do some things because he's choosing this thing. Can't have tea with Bev and Chris. Can't stay out late every night hanging out with friends. Got to go home and sleep. I have to eat and sleep and run and bike and fix my bike and make sure my gear is ready and get a swimming coach and get better and better at all of these things. And then I have to rest on purpose. If you've been waiting around for Vaughn to become your friend, he probably doesn't have time. Give back to him in November. Because when he chose this, these intentional choices means he can't choose some other things. This is how he teaches us about discipleship. Vaughn, I asked some of your family members about you. Your father tells us that you were a great crawler and you were a toddler that did not want to walk. That he was fast on his side. He was one of those crab crawlers. And because he was really fast on his side, he didn't want to go upright. And then one day he decided to go upright and he was a running toddler. That it's been like that for Vaughn all along. His dad, Greg, tells the story of Vaughn on his bicycles with training wheels. And Vaughn was fast, always fast. And his dad said, "Let's take the training wheels off." And Vaughn said, "No, thank you." One day, Dad comes out and finds Vaughn on the garage floor with the tools in his own hands, removing his own training wheels. Gets on his bike and takes off. Vaughn, your dad tells me that neck break speed is what you've done these sports all of your life. And that it impresses him, your profound depth of discipline, your dose of passion, that you stay with things until you master them. These are admirable qualities. When I ask his sister, Natalie, "Tell me about Iron Vaughn," that's what we call him right now for the next month, okay? Iron Vaughn. When I ask Natalie, "Tell me about your brother," she said, "I'm impressed. I'm impressed with how connected Vaughn is to his body." Some people think that races like this kind of cause you to be pulled away from your body, an out-of-body experience. You're so fatiguing and taxing your body. But she says, Vaughn is so attuned. He seems to be constantly in touch with how much fuel he needs and how to prepare and this gradual manner that he's built this foundation, right? It's like he's in a near constant state of conversation with his body. Natalie says it's actually a very beautiful thing. And when I asked Becky about Vaughn, the athlete, she said, "You know, I've always known he was hardcore. I knew what I was getting myself into. And part of my vows at the wedding, I believe I said something like, 'I support you in every race of your life.'" "It's not always been easy," she says. "But I admire his level of commitment towards me, towards many things in life, including the triathlon. And I hope someday to model that kind of commitment in my own aspirations." Becky says to you this morning, thank you for being so fully attentive and committed in your life and in your marriage. Vaughn teaches us, friends, do you see the lessons for discipleship here? Small choice by small choice, rhythms and patterns. Things we choose. There are not accidental athletes, like there are not accidental disciples. Every day we'll choose. Every day I have to choose to get out of the center of the story and let God back in the middle. Every day I have to choose to remember again, the world is not at my command. As a disciple, every day I'll have to choose to share all over again. I have to share my things. Share my time, share my resources, share my convictions, share my voice. Every day, discipleship makes demands. I'll choose. You'll choose. Patience and gentleness and compassion and presence and attention. Small choice by small choice. Not every day, discipleship is picture worthy. Not for Vaughn either. Not every day will be for Instagram. Not every day we feel 100% committed. Sometimes we will have to completely rest our bodies. With this in mind then, as we close, look at the last passage with me in Hebrews chapter 12. If you have a Bible, open it. Let's read this together. Because in Hebrews chapter 12, one of the most widely known athlete metaphor passages in the New Testament, this author imagines that there's a stadium full of people, and they have lived in every age through every time period. The people in the stadium, they have already done their race, but they've not lost interest in this game of life. They're present. They're participating. They're pictured in the stadium as sports fans for the rest of us still running. They cheer along those who are running. Some of them in the stands, they've been named in Hebrews chapter 11. They go by the name of Abel and Enoch and Moses and Abraham and Rahab. There's a long-distance foot race underway when we get to the beginning of Hebrews chapter 12, and the finish line is far out of sight, and people will want to quit, and we won't think we're fit enough to endure till the end, and our determination and our focus will be tested. And the race, it's not for the sake of eliminating other athletes. The race is for the sake of eliminating my weaknesses. The race is to get rid of the worst in me. And when the fatigue looks like it's finally set in, people from every age are gathered in the stands. They're called a great cloud of witnesses because there are no lonely athletes. Hebrews 12 says, "Therefore, since we're surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders." It's why the men have to pull up their gowns, their dresses, and hold them right here so they won't trip and run. Let us throw off everything that could hinder us. The sin so that easily entangles us. Let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and the perfecter of our faith. I understand, Vaughn, that in the final hours of the Kona race, I've not been there, I'm a little more educated than I was a few weeks ago, but I understand in the final hours of the Kona race, as the 17 hours come to a close, that finish line, it fills up with people, athletes who've already finished, and they come back to watch as you count down the last hour or so, as everyone who's been in the race takes their opportunity to complete it. And musicians gather and dancers gather and cheerleading takes place as one by one the last of the athletes come over that finishing line. I understand in Kona next month that's what will happen. Vaughn will have already finished. He won't be in the last hour, friends. But he might be back there. And we could imagine something like a great cloud of witnesses cheering on till the final athlete in Kona is able to complete, and they call it a day. Some of you here remember that it was in 1982 that this Ironman competition was launched onto the worldwide scene. I don't remember. Some of you do, because the ABC Wide World of Sports cameras caught all of this on tape. It was after this year when they watched this Julia Moss cross the finish line that this Kona competition grew to become what it is today, one of the toughest ever. On that day, this young female athlete was a college student, 22, 23 years old. She happened to be studying sports exercise physiology, of all things. She's in the last part of the race, and she's not doing so well. She has a great lead on everyone else. But remember, this is before protein bars and liquid packs you can drink on the run. The specialists say maybe she had the equivalent of a banana and some water in her system by the time she gets to the last of the marathon, the last of that 26 miles. It is not how she finishes the race, though that became the focus of the attention. It is that everyone gathers and we all complete this race. There are no lonely athletes.